on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome to this week's Orient Hour on Phoenix 98 FM. I'm Trevor Singfield, and in the studio with me tonight is our regular panellist, Lee Boyce. Lee, how are you this evening?
Yeah, not too bad, Trev, all good.
That's good to hear, mate, that's good to hear. Anyway, so hopefully on the phone we have Steve, who will take us through the rest of the evening.
Hello, Trevor and Lee and Orient supporters everywhere. Good to hear from you. Now, I'm thinking my job tonight might be to cheer everyone up a bit. There's a lot of negativity around for understandable reasons. I'm interested to know how much of it we're going to hear from you two in the studio as we firstly discuss the Carlisle game last Saturday, and we'll listen to Joby McEnough's full interview on that. And then we may get a bit of positivity from our special guest, who is a man who gave up West Ham United to follow the O's, so he's not such a bad stick. He's record company boss and DJ Ed Piller, a man of trenchant opinions, I can promise you, and he'll express some of them on Joby and the management position and on last week's controversy about the Orient women's team as well, which he's well informed about, plus the season as a whole. And after that, we three will look ahead to the final game at Salford on Saturday. Are we going to go out with a bang or a whimper? And beyond that, we'll ask what happens about the manager's job and about all those players out of contract. So, that's the lineup. Let's crack on. The last home game of the season was against Carlisle, who we'd recently beaten away in almost the last minute with what was, of course, voted fans' goal of the season by Connor Wilkinson, that award presented last week. Carlisle, of course, reversed that by winning 3-2 with a late goal of their own in a match of three penalties. Trevor, I wonder if it was a match to sum up the season in a way. Very entertaining first half, a 2-1 lead, and then a falling away, really. What did you think?
Yeah, you've described that quite well. Well, to start with, I thought it was quite an attacking lineup that we put out. Personally, I'm not sure why McEnough started, maybe apart from playing his final game on the hallowed turf or mud at E10. Maybe a youngster should have started in what we call a dead rubber. But, I think what it did prove a little bit is why both our managers this season have stuck two people in front of the back four, because defensive frailties have cost us possible 3 points, because we should have been out of sight, let's be honest. We should have been 3-0 up before Carlisle even mustered anything, to be honest, mate.
Yes, that's a good point about the two holding midfielders, because a lot of us have thought that maybe that was one too many and we could have pushed the extra man all the way up front, really, in a 4-1-3-2 formation, for instance. But, Lee, there were four changes, of which the most interesting for most people, I think, would have been Danny Johnson left out and Connor Wilkinson starting up front, where, what, inside half an hour, he scored once, he had another effort somehow blocked on the line, perhaps over the line, and he won a penalty. I mean, did he convince you that that is actually his best position?
Wilkinson played for Dagenham up front. He scored goals for Dagenham as a forward. We signed him from Dagenham as a forward. He does a great job out wide, but he's come very predictable on what the way he does it. He cuts inside, does the same thing every time. So it's a case of either drop him or move him somewhere else. I think I said before in our group chat that I thought Johnson was going to get dropped. And Wilkinson playing now, he's played there in his career. I don't understand this. He wants to play out wide, so he plays out wide. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
He's played most of his career, well, virtually everywhere in his career as a centre-forward, hasn't he?
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah. Looking back at his track record, yeah. I mean, I say, listen, he's done a fantastic job on the right side of that three, but when we've needed someone to come in, well, especially when Johnson was injured, he's probably the best man to go through the middle. There's a lot of things that baffle me this season, and that's certainly one of them.
Yeah, well, 15 goals, mostly from the wing, is a good effort, let's be fair. The other question, of course, is how many he and Danny Johnson might have got playing together up the middle, I suppose. Trevor, would you have tried that at least at some stage?
Well, most definitely either of the managers could have tried it, couldn't they? But I think it was more Wilkinson wanting to play on the right. I mean, if you're the manager, you say, listen here, son, you're going down the middle, and if you don't like it, you can go and warm the bench. I mean, he does it in one game to go, and he shows what he can do. I mean, he's a big fella as well, isn't he? And he's no shrinking violet. He can be niggly and needly. You wouldn't, if you were a centre-half, you wouldn't fancy marking him for 90 minutes, would you? Because he does put it about, and we like that kind of thing to a certain extent. We don't want no shrinking violets up the front, but yeah, it may be a wasted opportunity, and who knows where it could have took us. But that's down to both the managers we've had this year have only Joby done it at the end.
Yes, I cast your mind back. I reckon we've played 52 games this season, the league plus all those cup ties. If you go back to the start of November, we played at Charlton in the meaningless game in the EFL Trophy or whatever it was then called. And for the first time, we played 3-5-2. And because there were a lot of changes, the two at the front, rather surprisingly, perhaps, were Louis Dennis and JMD. And Louis Dennis got a good goal that day, although he also missed a sitter. And so 4 days later, we went to Colchester in the league. And for the only time this season, we started off with 3-5-2. And interestingly, it was Wilco and Louis Dennis. DJ was left out, which was interesting at the time. And you just wonder, if it had gone right that day and Wilco and Dennis had made it work up front and we got a result, would Ross have realised that maybe that was a way forward and a way out of his 4-3-3? As it happened, of course, it was a poor performance. We went 2 goals down, got a very late consolation goal, and the 3-5-2 was never heard of again. And in fact, we came back, to be fair, we came back the next week and beat Harrogate 3-0 when Danny Johnson got his hat-trick. So that's maybe one way that the season could have changed. I suppose the other advantage, crucially, of Connor up the middle is it gives you a target man to hit with those longer balls, as we used to have when Matt Harrold was out there. And Lawrence Vigouroux's clearances and Dan Happy's long passes to Connor are much more likely actually to stay on the pitch because Wilco isn't just standing right out on the touchline. But talking of Danny Johnson, what about his form since this injury? If you remember, 2nd of January, after the Salford game, he had 17 goals. He got injured that day, missed 4 games, and 4 months on, he's added just 3 more goals. So he's got to the 20, but disappointment for those who had a little flutter on him as League Two's leading scorer. Is it a case, Lee, of a player just not getting back to his best as a result of the injury, do you think?
I think it's the change in the formation. We've gone more defensive, like with two holding. I mean, yes, like Trev before, you look at Brophy, look at Hector, Johnson. Since Joby's come in, all their games seems to have dropped off. I mean, they were Brophy and Johnson were talked about as two of the player of the year early in the season. I don't think it's so much with his injury. I just think it's the way we've been playing. It's just we've gone more direct, like you said. Probably direct balls don't benefit Johnson, but we've gone more direct under Joby, and that definitely don't benefit Johnson, sort of thing. I don't think it's anything more than that. I think it's just the system we've been playing doesn't suit him.
But he's often played Danny Kemp as a number 10, which has become more of a, say, a 4-2-3-1. I mean, theoretically, he's had more support up there.
Yeah, he's had a bit more support, but I just think everything he hit in the first part of the season did go in. And sometimes the second part of the season, he's had one-on-ones, and he's had chances where he could have actually sort of maybe saved Ross's bait, and when he's clean through and he's missed a chance versus Port Vale, I think one to come to mind. But the forwards, I think his overall strike rate is still pretty good, but forwards have batches of form. I think Alexander back in 2006 didn't score for ages and got 7, 8, 9 on the spin. That's what forwards do. But whether he had a strike partner with Wilkinson, we won't know that now, will we? But it's a shame because injuries do affect players' confidence. I mean, he probably could have scored any goal in that run, couldn't he? You know, and some of them were absolutely stunning goals, weren't they?
Steve, just quickly, sorry. You're saying about Kemp playing up front or playing in a 10.
Yeah.
You look at the goals that we've scored under Joby, the majority of them have come from around or outside the box. Like, it's like when Johnson was scoring, we was getting it in the 6-yard box. We've got more forward, like you say, we look like a more forward team there, but we're not creating the chances in the actual penalty area. The goals are coming from outside, like Wilkinson cutting in, Dan Kemp picking the balls up, loose balls that are coming out, a couple of headers as well, sort of thing, that have gone in from the defenders. But like I say, we're not actually getting them balls in the 6-yard box to Johnson.
All right, well, we ought to let the manager have his say on some of that. We don't always play the manager's after-match interview on this programme because a lot of listeners will already have heard it. But this week, there was only a shortened version on the club site, so here it is in full. Joby talking, as ever, to Dave Victor.
No, he should have done it. Well, Joby, thanks for joining us. A disappointing end to end the home campaign.
Yeah, from our point of view, you know, we wanted to finish off with a win. It was certainly a game I felt we could have done. Unfortunately for us, we just haven't quite got the balance right between looking good offensively and creating and scoring chances and being solid enough at the other end. Again, I think even to lose it as we did is just doubly disappointing, really, and you know, not the way you wanted to end the season.
Connor Wilkinson in the centre position in the first half, he looked a real danger man.
Yeah, again, it's a position that we looked at from our point of view that we felt Con could be very effective today, and he was. You know, he gave us you know, that little option of linking up front, but also that threat, you know, in behind in terms of where the chances came from, certainly his goal and then the penalty, and I thought he was a real bright spot in a disappointing result, but certainly in terms of performance wise him, and I thought Brose on the left in particular as well, looked a real threat as well.
You wanted a reaction after the disappointment at Southend. The result wasn't what you wanted, but did you get the sort of performance?
Not for long enough. I think again we've done it in fits and starts throughout the game, we've done it in fits and starts throughout the season. You know, from my point of view, again, it was a game that we should have gone on and won. You know, we were very, very comfortable for periods, certainly in the first half. Didn't take our chances to kill them off. And then, as has happened too many times this year, you know, we weren't strong enough at the back and conceded goals that have obviously cost us the result.
Why have the O's conceded so many goals, particularly in the last four matches?
I just think it's a... Again, I've got to look at myself first and foremost, which I will do. Obviously, I'll set the team up to go and play. There's been a bit more of an emphasis on, obviously, I know it sounds silly, but on the need to go and win a game. I think when I first came in, it was a matter of really stabilising, getting ourselves solid and getting ourselves up and running, which we did. And then there's obviously, once we've got ourselves an opportunity to go and get in the playoffs, we have to win games, and we probably have been a little bit too open at times. Like today, it's a game we wanted to win. We didn't want to come today and shut up shop and try and nick a 1-0. You know, we wanted to come out and try and play some good stuff, which we did. But again, it's just, from our point of view, we just haven't got that balance right in terms of offensively and defensively.
You have to go back to the 91-92 season for the last time that Leighton Orient failed to score a penalty in the Football League.
Yeah, it's not been a good season in terms of penalties for us. Listen, I've got no problem with somebody stepping up and missing a penalty, though. Dan Kemp has been fantastic for us, showed great character to come back and get a goal in the game. And it's just one of those things, man. I'd back him again if he wanted to take the next one. Got no issues with him whatsoever. Technically, he's very good. Listen, we practice him. He takes penalties in training. He's taken them before, in his career. And it's just one of those things. They've obviously missed one themselves and then scored one. So no issues with that at all.
Jamie Tilley, okay?
Yeah, got a knock. He did well to get through the first half, to be fair. He was struggling a little bit. Obviously, an enforced change at half-time. But just a whack, so hopefully he's not too bad.
Just the one game left now, Salford City. How are you going to approach that one?
Again, another game that we've got to try and go and get a result in. They're desperate for it. They've had a result today that didn't go the way they wanted it to go. So I'm sure they'll be coming out, all guns blazing to make sure they get the points to give them an opportunity to get in the playoffs. But I said it last week, I don't want to be helping anybody. We wanted to be in the playoffs. We haven't made it. And the last thing we want to do is now give someone a helping hand to get there and have to watch them, later on in May. So from our point of view, we're going up to try and to win the game and try and spoil the party a little bit.
Thanks, Joby. Good luck.
Cheers, thank you.
Disappointing home defeat by Carlisle on Saturday. Now, I'm not sure how much sympathy he's going to get from you two in there, but this balance between defence and attack he mentioned. If we go back, I suppose Ross decided around Christmas time we were conceding too many goals, so we tightened up. But then after three clean sheets, we stopped scoring, catastrophically so really for Ross, because we went, if you remember, four games without a goal. We were two in seven games, and then he was out of a job. So Joby was right, wasn't he, to try and put the emphasis more on attack and that 4-2-3-1 formation which he introduced. It's only Trevor in the last four or five games, it's when it's gone wrong, hasn't it? We've now conceded 11 in five games, whereas the defence had looked reasonably solid earlier on because of that emphasis.
Yeah, well, that's the bottom line of it is we were just not good enough. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. The defence has been chopping and changing most of the season. I think when we kept a lot of clean sheets with Ross, it was settled of sort of Hapak and Ola in the middle, Ling on the right and Brophy on the left, and I think we had a good run there. I don't agree with playing Akinola at right back. I like him down the middle, and as if he's a scapegoat for the Exeter defeat. But no, we've just not been good enough at the back. And then you build from the back, Thompson come in, unlucky to lose him, and then you start going more forward. And then when it's come down to nitty gritty, when we've got to go and win games, we've been done, and that's as simple as that. And that's why we're mid-table.
Lee, one quick one before we move on. Louis Dennis, like a lot of you, I have a little WhatsApp group exchanging messages during the game, and round about half-time I was being a bit critical of Louis Dennis when someone pointed out he'd actually made an excellent run in the build-up to that occasion when Connor had his shot blocked on the line. He was instrumental in that and what must have been one of our best moves of the season, really. But does it strike you that he's one maybe like JMD, who just does it in patches, in short bursts, and just hasn't proved over long enough, or certainly over 90 minutes, that he's worth the place?
Absolutely, Steve. I mean, I think I said last time on the show, he's obviously a player in there. He can do things, but he's nowhere near been consistent enough over 2 years. Saying that, I've got a feeling he's going to get a new contract.
Have you? Oh, right. Well, that's interesting. We'll come on to contracts very shortly, who we might keep, who might go. But let's hear now from our special guest, who's going to bring some positivity to us, I'm sure. He's the DJ, broadcaster and record company owner, and most importantly, Orient fan Ed Piller, who's been talking to Billy Herring and Andy Gilson. Here's Billy to introduce it.
OK, thank you to Steve in the studio, and I'm here with Ed Piller from Acid Jazz Records and Andy Gilson as well. Ed, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
And you've already warned me that you've got a bit of a sore throat because you're a popular man this week, is that right?
I sound like you, don't I, really? Let's be honest. I've done about four podcasts. I actually do a couple of radio shows of my own as well. I don't know why it's all coming this week, but I've definitely, funny enough, I was quite ill a few years ago and I had throat cancer, which means that every so often my voice goes. So it's just on the edge at the moment. We should be all right, because I've got a couple of cans of beer with me. So
that's right. So, something to keep you lubricated, eh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Eddie, tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously, you you were mentioning to me before the show that you are not a lifelong Orient fan. You actually transferred from West Ham. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the biggest sin you can commit for some people, leaving your childhood team. But, you know, I was in about 1983. I've been having second thoughts. I mean, I was a big West Ham fan. I was probably 19, 20 then. I'd seen them win the FA Cup against Arsenal. And, you know, I was starting to enjoy football less and less. There was a lot of violence at West Ham, and there was a lot of standing arms about. And the deciding factor was that I got really bad kicking, probably by Bow Station, from that group of charming Londoners who call themselves the Cockney Reds, which, why you would support Manchester United if you're from London, I've got no idea. But I was quite seriously hurt, thrown on some train tracks, and I stopped going. But of course, you know, once you've been brought up with football, I used to drive back from Carnaby Street on my scooter on a Saturday lunchtime, go and have a pint in the Shakespeare's Head in the West End, meet a load of other mods, drive back to my house in Woodford, and I'd go, you know, 20 yards from the ground in Brisbane Road. And my dad took me to see the O's many times when I was a kid. I saw the semi-final at Wembley, and that wasn't at Wembley, was it? It was at Chelsea. And, you know, I just thought, oh, I can't have a look. And in those days, we used to park our scooters by the old toilets on the west side, climb on the scooter seat and jump over the wall into the toilets.
Brilliant.
Why? To save £3. I mean, come on. But anyway, you know, and I found the atmosphere at the O's. I know they'd always been my kind of second team. And from that point on, for the first game that I went back to, I just fell in love with the team all over again, you know, and I started going home and away for many years. I don't get to go away now because one of my jobs is I'm a DJ. And usually, lockdown, I haven't been a DJ for over a year now. But before that, I would DJ every weekend all over the country and all over the world. And this, you know, really cut down my going away. But sometimes, for example, if I'm DJing in Birmingham, I went to see us play Walsall away 2 years ago. But that was probably the last away game I went to. But I still go home whenever I can.
You need to get your manager to sort out your touring dates around the away games, you know, like to...
Well, do you know what? I used to, because I played a lot of cricket on a Saturday, I used to not DJ on a Saturday, but then I still wouldn't be able to go to Orient anyway because I'd be playing cricket. But it was funny because we always used to play against Leighton Orient Supporters Club, by the way. They had a very good cricket team for many, many years. I don't know if they've still got one now. But so, you know, my footballing kind of viewing has been kind of limited to Tuesday nights. I don't do the club streaming service, so I haven't seen hardly any games this season. I think we had a few, didn't we, at the beginning? I don't remember much about football.
Some people might say that's lucky you haven't seen a lot of this season, if I'm honest, Eddie.
I do remember. I actually filmed it on my phone. I've got no idea who it was, but we scored. And I never film things on my phone. And there was a free kick about 30 yards out right at the beginning of the season. And I thought, you know, this side seemed pretty good. And whoever it was, I've got no idea now, took this curling free kick in the top corner. And I thought, well, it don't get much better than that. You're in the back. And then, unfortunately, that was probably it.
Eddie, talk to us about Acid Jazz Records. So, see, that's your company and stuff. When did you start that?
Well, I started it with a fellow DJ by the name of Giles Peterson in 1988. So it's been going a long time. Giles left in 89, and I carried on alone. But it's, you know, it's had its ups and downs, but it's been fundamentally one of the most popular, successful independent labels in the country. Is very specifically soul, funk and jazz. You know, so if you like that kind of music, you probably know the label. We've had quite a lot of big bands I've discovered and produced over the years, like Jamiroquai and the Brand New Heavies and people like that. I've had, you know, people like Gregory Isaacs, the reggae superstar. I made his best-selling album for 40 years, 30 years. And Tony Christie, we did 7 or 8 years ago, had a massively successful record. Not like Amarillo, I may hasten to add. It was a good It was a good record. So, you know, it's a busy job, but these days I do less time in the office, more time DJing and traveling the world, having a laugh, as you would, you know.
Yes.
Now, football, but what did you see? You know, someone like Jamiroquai, they were passed around, nobody picked them up, and they hadn't got a label. So what did you see that they did, other people didn't see? Because that was a great decision. I mean,
well, here's the thing with JK, right? I didn't know that he'd been all around the music industry and he'd been turned down by everybody. So I've got a friend who's managing him called Tunji Williams. His brother was in a band called The Young Disciples, who were very big on our scene, the acid jazz scene, had a few hit records. Tunji brings in a cassette and plays me this tape and says, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, who is she?" And he laughed. And I said, he said, he opened the window in the office in Denmark Street in Tin Pan Alley, just above my studio. And he goes, "Oi." And this kid wearing this stupid hat made out of an old fur coat, a Mexican poncho, a pair of Adidas Gazelles and some flares, came running over. And I said, "Yeah, but where's the girl?" And he said, "No, there isn't a girl. It's him." So I said, "Well, quite simply, I don't believe you." So he goes, "All right, give me the Brand New Heavens album." So I got the Brand New Heavens album, which was in the charts at the time, which I'd produced. And he put on an instrumental from that album. And he said, "Right, off you go, Jay." And he did the whole thing in front of me, the funny dancing, the singing, just over the top of a song that, you know, wasn't his song. And I just said, "Right, here's your contract." I mean, there was only three of us in Acid Jazz at the time. I said to my assistant, "Look, print out a contract and put his name on it." So we did. He bought it back the next day, signed, you know. And then after I kind of started producing him, people noticed this kid. And suddenly everybody was trying to sign him. And, of course, we'd sign him. We wouldn't sell him. And then in the end, Sony attacked us relentlessly until we handed over his contract. We sold his contract. You know, and I received well over £1 million for that. And funnily enough, Acid Jazz doing very well at the time. And this was what gave me the cash to consider purchasing Leighton Orion around that time. I thought, when was it? 93, 94, when it all went tits up?
Yeah.
So I put together a business plan. I got my bank on board. I had quite a lot of chats with poor Tony Wood, who'd lost everything, by the way. I think he was a great servant for the Orient, but he lost everything with the civil war in Rwanda, all his coffee plantations, everything. So I did a business plan. We agreed that I would buy the club, and then I put my accountants in to do something called forensic due diligence, which is where if you buy something for a lot of money or you're investing a lot of money, you have to examine the books going back a certain period of time. And my accountants just said, "You can't do it. There are too many unquantifiable holes in what they've got for you to look at. So if you do this, your, you know, £1.5 million that you're thinking of investing in it," which is quite a lot of money in those days.
But it's a lot of money now.
He said, "Well, you'll lose it. You'll lose it. And that is a black hole." So I had to pull out, and I was heartbroken at the time because I was, you know, the club was so stupid. Acid Jazz was the biggest thing in the country at the time. You know, Jamiroquai was fucking number one in the charts. And I bid for Leighton Orient sponsorship. Could you imagine Jamiroquai wearing an Acid Jazz Leighton Orient shirt?
Amazing.
They went for Heat Electric. Thanks, guys. Good decision. See, that's the kind of decisions that you know, football's a synergistic entity. If you get all your ducks in a row. See, for example, I'd approached Admiral and done a prospective deal with the owners of the Admiral brand to reintroduce the Braces kit in its original form. Or I got Duffer of St. George to redesign the Admiral Braces kit with Admiral's permission. You know, all these things were in the business plan. It would have been the coolest club in the world, no doubt. And unfortunately, I couldn't do it. Some of the things in my business plan did appear once Barry had taken over the club. You know, good luck to them. I think they saved our club. There's no doubt about that. I think they did a really good job at saving our club as well. I just think if I'd have done it, it would have been super cool. There you go.
We've had some concerts, haven't we?
Well, hey, come on. Who knows what? I mean, see, the interesting thing about the Orient is they're everybody's second favourite club, right, in London, especially growing up. You know, you had sensible relations between the First Division and the Second Division. When Tottenham and West Ham were at home, Orient would be away. When Orient was at home, they would make sure that people who normally went to West Ham and Tottenham could come to the O's. So that built up a love for Orient amongst. And it's, you know, it really upsets me to hear the stick that Orient fans give West Ham on the pitch. You know, at the games. You know, chanting and slagging off West Ham and on the internet. I just think it's so pointless. Those two clubs had such a brilliant relationship all through the 1960s, 70s, and even the early 80s, that I just think it's pointless. Where did that come from? You know, most of our players of our best period of football came from West Ham. You know, people forget that. Mervyn Day, Tommy Taylor. I mean, there were millions of Jeff Pike. Anyway.
Sorry. It is interesting how it's changed over the years. I mean, my old man is staunch Orient, and he doesn't like West Ham because of what they did with the Olympic Stadium and whether it's got anything to do with that. But I know my dad used to go to West Ham when he was younger as well. Him and his mates used to go to West Ham when they were at home, and then they'd go to Orient when we were at home.
Exactly the point.
Yeah. I would never dream of going to West Ham now. And that, I don't know whether it's a generational thing or... Andy, what do you think? You're a bit older than me.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Well, it's true.
It is true. I'm even older than you, Ed, so if that was possible, but I am.
Thank you.
But only a couple of years, mate. Only a couple of years. No, I think you're quite right. I mean, used to look around, there'd be people wearing West Ham scarves at Orient, you know, but that sort of fell by the wayside. I think, cost and the crowds did dip a lot anyway in the 80s and late 70s, early 80s. So I think people drifted away from football in general. And if you were going to both, you probably just went to West Ham if you were West Ham was your main team, and sort of people dropped away a little bit and the crowds went down. But I do think obviously there was bad feeling over the Olympic Stadium. But I will always say this with the Olympic Stadium is that people seem to forget that the one thing Barry did, and very uncharacteristic for Barry Hearn, is that he said he's not interested, and he pulled out, and he didn't say yes we're interested. He once they said that they didn't want retractable seating, he pulled out, and then at that point West Ham pulled in, and
yeah,
it's no good shouting about it afterwards. You pulled out. Now in business you sort of try and keep a toe in the water if you can until you really know it's a no-go. You never, you know, quantifiably say, I'm not interested. Do you think, well, I'll have a think about it. I'll have a, you know, unless you're really 100% notes and a wrong one, you're not going to, you know, you're in business, Eddie. You think, well, I'll just keep my options open a little bit here. I'm not saying I will, but let me keep my options open a little bit. Unless you really know it's a bad call, then you'll say no. But, you know, most people, and Barry, that's very uncharacteristic of Barry. And then, of course, he started hollering and shouting afterwards, but it's too late.
See, we will never know the high politics of that situation. You know, it's way below our pay grade. Barry was negotiating with the government, fundamentally.
Yeah.
You know, with however it was set up, they were representing government. I always thought a good idea would be to take the hockey stadium and then have West Ham and Orient in the same area. You could improve the transport links, which had been built up in the Olympics. I think the hockey stadium held about 15,000, I think.
19,000, perfect.
That would have been a great idea. Then Barry could have built his housing estate in Brisbane Road, because I think that's what, you know, that was what was probably going to happen. But either way, we are where we are, you know, and I don't like to hear... I mean, by all means, give Arsenal and Tottenham and everybody else whatever stick you like. But, for example, West Ham have been good to the club very recently, actually. I've just realised I can't talk about that, so I won't. But I'm all for more cooperation between the two clubs.
We'll just say that they've been very good to us by letting us have Dan Kemp. We'll just say that, yeah? Is that...
I can't remember if I've actually told you why they've been very good to us, but either way, Andy knows anyway, so I'll leave that there.
Oh, well, maybe that'll come out at a later date. That'll be one for
A later date, I think, is how we'll leave that one. Right, next question.
What do you make of this season then? Obviously, moving forward, you know, it's been a very strange season. We haven't been at Brisbane. But what do you make of it?
Well, OK, there's a couple of things that I think are really important here. I think, you know, nobody expected Justin Edinburgh to die, least of all Justin Edinburgh. So the plans that he had for our club, you know, would have taken us way beyond where we are now. And we know that. But with the chaos and shambles and the disgraceful Bichetti regime, you know, we were in a hole, right? So, you know, we weren't a stable club anyway when he came in. He'd only just started the job. We know that Ross didn't want the job and he said he didn't want it, you know, and that was maybe the time to look at the situation and say, stay on as head coach or whatever, and we'll get in somebody more experienced. But for whatever reason, we persuaded him to do it. Now, I don't know about you guys, and this is not what I hear on the fan chat sites and stuff. My Orient football in the 1980s was ruined for me as an experience on Saturday afternoons. And me and my friend Julian Creevy always talk about this. The relentless Clark, out. I mean, God, I hated it. How did the players feel about that? So, you know, here's my problem. I don't like the team or the club. They're humans. They read, you know, social media just as much as anyone else. And I don't think the negativity around Joby is going to do him or us any good. Now, we don't know whether he's going to get a contract or not, but I personally hope that he does. And I'll tell you why. The problem isn't Joby. The problem is the strength of the squad. When we lost our main goal scorer, we didn't score a goal for 3 months, pretty much. So people forget that and blame the manager. I personally think he's been a good servant to the club, and I think he deserves a chance. By all means, strengthen the squad, but leave him in place. And the negativity that has surrounded this, I think, is really bad for the club. Now, okay, we have played negative football, but if you look, all right, the last three games we lost. Joby's start was fabulous, and then we lost that 4-0 away, and it's Joby out. And I'm like, mate, he's lost one game. You know, I don't know what these people expect. You know, oh, I know, but the Tottenham manager's free. Let's get him. Be realistic, guys. I'd rather have three decent striking midfielders and keep Joby, but concentrate on playing progressive football, which we always played. We've always played progressive attacking football using wingers at our club. And when we've done that, it's been an enjoyable experience. That's all we've got to do. And why we faded towards the end of the season, you know, with a new manager, I don't quite know. I think it's because our squad's not good enough.
I mean, I was talking to someone on Twitter the other day. There's a few things that you've mentioned there that ring true with me. I'm also someone who would like to see Joby get the job. And I said the other day that I understand why people don't want him to get the job. I do understand that. I think some people want to see a new face, a fresh face. A bit like when Justin came in, he had no ties to the club. I do think some people want that. But having said that...
One sec. How many fresh faces did we have under the Italian lunatic? How many? We had one every 3 weeks. So, you know, I, for one, would like people to just calm down, a little bit of stability. You know, Christ, we were in the bloody non-league last or 2 years ago. Come on, with 13 managers in three, whatever. You know, we've done brilliantly this season. If you look at our position, 3 points off the playoffs, and suddenly everyone's saying we're crap. We're not crap. We just need a little bit of focus and chanting Joby out. Fortunately, there's been no, you know, supporters there. Chant that. That's not going to help anybody, least of all the club.
Do you think that some people are more frustrated because we're not at the ground? Because honestly, I don't believe that Twitter or the message boards are reflective of the overall opinion of the fan base. Personally, I think it's a few vocal people, and I include myself as part of that. I'm very vocal on social media, who have opinions and they share them. But I don't think it's representative of the club. You look at our average attendances between 4,500 and 5,000. There's not that many Orient fans commenting on Twitter, Facebook, and what have you. And I don't see it as a representation. What do you think?
I completely agree. But of course, when all you, actually, we're not there, so you're not meeting your mates in the bar or in the coaching horses or whatever, or the library or whatever, that's called, whatever that former town hall is.
The Leighton Technical.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're not seeing your mates talking about football. And bear in mind, an Orient supporter is a lonely chap or girl. You know, it's not like going to a pub and everyone's talking about the game last night. You've got to find the one that supports Orient. So we're kind of deprived of that social contact. And you're right, it tends to be a problem, but that's where we get our information from. So you're going to see it. You're going to see that, you know. But I just think, because the quiet majority aren't the vocal ones, it's people with strong opinions that want them read by other people. I've been getting, I don't post a lot on Leighton Orient fan sites. And when I have, it's been mainly get off the messages back, basically. Ross as well, you know, that whole campaign to get rid of Ross. I think he did pretty well in the circumstances. But I've got involved recently, and I'm beginning to think I haven't wanted to. And I've got involved over the shambles with the Leighton Orient ladies situation. And I've been really supporting the club here because the majority of people are just emotionally, well, it's a terrible thing. And I'll tell you what, I put, this is disgraceful. How can my club treat these people? And then I thought, well, hold on a minute. Something's not right here. So I started to do a little bit of digging, and through people I know, you know, at the club or wherever, I discovered that the club have put the situation out there. The club have done exactly the right thing and the thing that anybody would have done in their situation. So I just wish that people wouldn't be so... I've read some awful things, you know. I'm ripping up my season ticket. Sounds like Richard Littlejohn, for God's sake. You know, I'm never going to Spurs again because people took the knee. Yeah, come on. Get over it. You know, there's an issue here and it's been resolved. Let's move forward because the club, without Kent and his team or Nigel or whatever, we wouldn't be here. So just grow up a bit. This is, by the way, the ladies' team is a hangover from Bichetti. That's the problem.
Yeah, well said.
Well said. Absolutely, yeah. Go on,
it's one of them things. I mean, as you say, there's certain things we can't say at the moment about it. But I think the Orient didn't do themselves any favours with perhaps in their statements not too well, and that probably invited
that's
a lot of
criticism. That's an understatement, actually. Yeah.
Well, I'm being polite. but now the thing is, Eddie, I think it's like anything. I mean, they invited us a bit of trouble with a poorly worded statement in bottom line. And but overall, we know that they are 100% the offended party, not the offendees. You know,
absolutely.
And people behind the club, they were left with zero option but to drop two divisions. And you know, if you can't deal with people who won't communicate.
They gave the setup at Leighton Orient Ladies many, many opportunities. They begged them to get involved. And for a reason that only they can know, because we're not allowed to talk about it, they chose not to. So the club did everything right.
Well, I can only tell you what we know from here. The Orient Hour's been going for 5 years now, and Chris Hood, who was the original presenter, he tried very hard to get the Orient ladies involved down here because we thought, yeah, let's try and promote their game, let's try and give the ladies' game a lift, because at the time they were being watched by, you know, one person and their dog, and we thought, let's get the... And you it would have been easier to try and get the Arsenal first team in. You know, the options have been put up, you know. I don't think we can come down and we can't do this. And then I tried and I thought, you know what, it's not worth it. And we left it. And it's no disrespect to the actual ladies who were playing, but the setup there, it was like, you know, it was easier to get through the Iron Curtain in the 60s. It was really, you know, it's a ridiculous situation. And as I say, I can understand the club having problems trying to communicate with them, because in the end, you just thought, you know what, I can't be bothered. And we carried on, which we shouldn't have happened. And that the ladies side are hopefully going forward now with the club, that they will form a regular a part of the show going forward, and we'll do our best to promote them once the club's got this in-house. We'll do our best to help along with, I've no doubt, the Outlook show and the Lowdown show. I'm sure we'll all be doing our best to help promote the ladies squad coming forward, but as I say, up till now we haven't been able to.
Now, the only thing, and then we'll finish talking about the ladies thing, the only thing that troubles me about this is the amount of negative publicity and criticism at a time when we don't need it, you know? I said some things in defence on social media about the club only yesterday, to be kind of shot down in flames, you know, about people talking about on TalkSport, etc., etc. I was on TalkSport talking about Orient only a few months ago for a whole hour with Johnny Owen and Mark Webster. It's possible to put our side of the story and to make people understand, and I will phone TalkSport tomorrow and I will arrange an appointment for me to go back on air and talking about late night to undo some of the damage that's been done by people who don't understand what's happened. So that, you know, let's try and be positive on the scene. We've ended this season with a terrible taste in our mouths. You know, from performances, from the uncertainty about Joby. You know, yesterday, he's got the job. He hasn't got the job. He's got the job. You know, who knows? It's not our business.
Can I put something to you here?
Here we are, Ed Pillar. We're going to have to cut you off, Andy, but there will be more from Ed in next week's programme, presented by Billy. Ed Pillar, boss of the Acid Jazz record label, who could have become owner of Leighton Orient, which it sounds as though it would have been interesting. But clearly, as he says, he's back in Joby, as is Billy, and the position of the manager, we have to say, is the most important thing facing the club at the moment. Joby's had 15 games as interim manager. His record now 1-6, drawn 4, lost 5, 22 points from 15, which over a whole season, well, multiplied by 3, gives you 66 to 69 points. In other words, in any division, any season, it's above halfway, but it's outside the playoffs. So, Trevor, what would you like the decision to be, and what do you think it will be?
I reckon the fan base will be totally split on this one. 1-7, not the best credentials to go and show the chairman that you want the job. My question would be, has he improved their style of play? Very questionable, marginally maybe. I don't know what leadership qualities he's got as a manager. It's hard to judge after the 16 games, including Salford Saturday. Are we going to trust him to rebuild the squad, which will be able to challenge next season? I mean, we're looking at 15 players. How much does he know about the lower leagues and the lower league players, which we're going to get in? So for me, it's a big decision for the club, obviously. I will sit on the fence because you could get a tried and trusted journeyman as a manager, or it's Joby as his first stint as a number one. And to get them bedded in for the next campaign is a tough one. So, myself personally, it's a gamble, but if he gets it, he's got to be given sort of 2 years and to be left alone for the 2 years. We can't have any more sort of, oh, this is not working, and let's get rid of him. Because, I'm not 100% that it'd be my choice.
No, I'm not sure our owners, even our owners, will be as patient as that either. Lee, what sort of manager do you want? What are the key qualities?
Well, I've always said I like a young manager, but that's not going to happen now. We need someone with a bit of stability. Like Richie Wellens ticks all the boxes. And I was saying before, I like Gary Johnson.
He was at Swindon, Richie Wellens.
Swindon, yeah. Salford, yeah. And Oldham. And Gary Johnson, for me, he's led virtually back into the Football League. He's an old head. He could do a job, definitely do a job for us for a couple of years to stabilise us, and then maybe there's another position for him somewhere else in the club.
So someone who knows our standard, really, knows our level is very important, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Right, and I know you're a bit concerned about the effect that the uncertainty, because there is uncertainty, let's be honest, has had on players deciding about whether to accept a new contract, whether they'd like to stay, who they'll be staying with as manager. I mean, when might the decision will be, do you think?
Steve, I think the whole thing about contracts has been absolutely handled terribly. I know Martin Ling said in the AGM that we turn around, it don't matter, like players leave, players come back in, we'll get players in. It's not that simple. If we're building a squad to get promotion next season, we should have at least 10, 11 players, 12 players under contract now. They should know who the manager is going into next season. I mean, Joby's had this for a third of the season, 43 games in the last two seasons, we've had an interim manager. it's it can explain the first 10 away, for the circumstance. Everything around the appointments of these managers has been absolutely shambolic. I just don't get the whole thing. Martin Ling turned round at the AGM and turned around and said, I know the supporters hero worship players. Don't worry, if anyone goes, we'll get someone else for you to worship. That's the most patronising thing I've ever heard from an Orient board, and we had Barry Earn as chairman. And I just can't believe that the attitude is so lackadaisy that they're sitting there with a manager, Joby. Six weeks ago, he gets the job, on his merit. Now, Trev said, does he get it now on his merit? They don't know what they're doing. They don't know who they're appointing. Everyone should know by now where we're going for next season. I just think it's crazy the way the whole situation's been run, and that falls at the feet of one man. I'm afraid. I'm sorry to say it, but Martin Ling has to be the one who answers all these problems. Why have we got 7 players under contract? Why did we give, after we got promoted, two-year deals to near enough the entire squad? Why did we not up that for a couple of years and break that down so we didn't have them all out of contract at the same time? It's a shambles, absolute shambles.
Trevor, we might need a bit of positivity in the last few minutes of the programme. Can you give us any at Salford? Can we manage to deny Salford a playoff place, which most people would like? Can we get ourselves a place in the top half of the table? At the moment, we're 11th. We've got Crawley, Port Vale, Bradford, who could all get above us if we lose on Saturday. I mean, I guess we have to hope that it means something to the players, don't we, and that they might be up for it, because Salford certainly will be.
Well, you just mentioned Port Vale there, and most people know I've got some good friends up there, and messages were swapped that they were squeaky bun time about 4 weeks ago, and now they could go above us. It shows how we have fallen away very badly. Last game of the season at Salford, I hope they muster a lot more fight than they did when they tried to relegate Southend, because to stop the money men from making the playoffs would be nice, because we have had a bit of rivalry over the last 3 years with him. So it's also an extra fixture for us guys who like to go to Manchester for an away day. But I just hope they put up some more fight than what they did the other week, to be perfectly honest. And yeah, we like going to Manchester, so come on, Aos, do us a favour.
We haven't dared mention the South End word, but we have done now. And one interesting thing from Joby's interview after that match, he talked about needing characters and leaders, which was, I don't think he's ever actually criticised the players in public, and players don't like that at all, understandably. But Lee, have we lacked characters and leaders?
Yeah, we have, Steve. I mean, I think we've done it for a couple of years now. I mean, we signed Thompson and he looked like a proper leader. Sadly, got injured more straight away. I mean, when you look at, I think a few times it's been mentioned, just appealing for decisions on the pitch, it's just, they just accept everything. It's there's no one seems to have that desire to take control. And I'll put Happy in that category. I think he's fallen away because he doesn't take control.
How many penalties has he conceded this season? I've lost count. It was bad. It was poor on Saturday, wasn't it? Was that an example of what you're talking about, the penalty conceded?
I think with Dan Happy, I think he's been affected by the amount of times that the changes of defence have been made. But I think he needs to, he's 120 games, 110 games now, he needs to stand up and say, I'm taking control of the defence. He's the best defender, technically, in the team. He needs to be the one who stands up and says, I'm experienced now, I'm the main defender, I'm taking control.
And has the whole season, do you think, been a missed opportunity? Or, as Trevor said, were we just really not good enough overall for any more than we've achieved?
I think the objective was the top 10, wasn't it, really? That's what the original goal. Looks like we're going to miss that, possibly miss that now. So I wouldn't say missed opportunity. We've missed an opportunity on building for next season.
Fair point. Trevor, here's a quick one for you. I know you're not bad on the stats. Our silly League Two this season, and I really think it has been a silly league, which team in our league has scored most goals this season?
Oldham.
Very good. Oldham Athletic are 18th in the table, and they have scored more goals than anybody. You'd normally expect to be looking pretty near the top of the table for the top scorers. Cambridge and Exeter have got 70. So Oldham could end up as the top scorers in our league, and they could end up in about 19th place. So it's been a funny old season, really, hasn't it, one way and another. Our season's awards had just been announced, no fewer than four awards for our goalkeeper, Lawrence Vigouroux, one for James Brophy. Lee, nobody going to argue with any of that, are they?
No, you can't argue with Vigouroux, can you? I think he's nicked everything, hasn't he?
Are we going to keep him, though?
No.
No. Because?
I think the majority of them are going to go. I think they're going back to the structure, the way it's all been done. I don't think they're going to want to stay when clear decisions ain't being made on the progression.
Right. So, disappointing times. We really need a good finish to it. In case anybody didn't see those season's awards, they are all on the website. Lawrence Vigouroux was the Manager's Player of the Year, the Player's Player of the Year, the Supporters Club Player of the Year. James Brophy was awarded the Captain's Player of the Year. Connor Wilkinson, as we said, got the goal of the season for that goal up at Carlisle from Vigouroux's assist. Joby was the PFA's community champion. Anthony Papadopoulos, who's one of those we might see a bit more of next season, was the Youth Team Player of the Year. And congratulations to Joe Austin, who's the performance analyst. He was one of the staff members of the year, as was Lucy Freeman, ticket office manager. Well done to them. So that's about it. We're out of time. But Trevor, give us a very quick positive end to hold on to, at least the financial shape of the club, the overall shape of the club, compared to what some have been through this season.
Yeah, we're all in good shape, and let's all look forward to the fixtures and that first away game. And then we can all sit there and look forward to going to Barrow, Salford, and hopefully we're not going to Sutton and Bromley. So, good luck to Torquay and one other, the ex-league clubs coming back in, because I'm very passionate about that. Love to see the Football League back up to the 92, but just can't wait to get back to Brisbane Road, and that's the only positive thing I've got to say about this season. Get back in there.
So say all of us. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Lee. Thanks to Eddie Pillar, plus Billy and Andy, who did the interview with him, to Karen for the podcast, to Nick Field, who was our producer. Today, we three are due to have one more session together before the summer. That'll be early next month. And by then, who knows what changes at the club. Best of all, we should be looking forward, as Trevor says, to an end to lockdown restrictions and hopes at last of getting back to Brisbane Road, up the O's.
Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground, you can get your kids in just £5, get an orienteer, it's only a quid, get a cup of tea. It's an up-to-pump Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup 78, we had John Sear, he's most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. Checkered Shirtley and Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spiel scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world.
On the Hour, across Brentwood and Billericay.